Blog Talk Radio.
I remember a teacher that I had. Now, I went through the seventh grade. I left home when I was 10 years old because I was hungry. This is true. I work in the summer and I go to school in the winter. But I had this one teacher. It was the principal of the Harrison School in Vincennes, Indiana. To me, this was the greatest teacher, a real sage of my time, anyhow. He had such wisdom. And we were all reciting the Pledge of Allegiance one day. And he walked over, this little old teacher, Mr. Laswell was his name. Mr. Laswell, he says, he says, I've been listening to you boys and girls recite the Pledge of Allegiance all semester, and it seems as though it's becoming monotonous to you. If I may I recite it and try to explain to you the meaning of each word? I, me, an individual, a committee of one, pledge, dedicate all of my worldly goods to give without self-pity, allegiance, my love and my devotion, to the flag, our standard, O glory, a symbol of freedom, wherever she waves, there's respect, because your loyalty has given her a dignity that shouts, freedom is everybody's job. United, that means that we have all come together. States, individual communities that have united into 48 great states. 48 individual communities with pride and dignity and purpose. All divided with imaginary boundaries, yet united to a common purpose. And that's love for country. And to the Republic. Republic. A state in which sovereign power is invested in representatives chosen by the people to govern. And government is the people. And it's from the people to the leaders. Not from the leaders to the people. For which it stands. One nation, meaning so blessed by God, indivisible, incapable of being divided, with liberty, which is freedom, the right of power to live one's own life without threats, fear, or some sort of retaliation, and justice, the principle or qualities of dealing fairly with others. For all. For all. Which means, boys and girls, it's as much your country as it is mine. And now, boys and girls, let me hear you recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the Pledge of Allegiance, under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer? And that would be eliminated from schools, too.
Good morning and welcome to Contending for Truth Radio. Dan, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
All right. It took everything I could, folks. I'm doing this whole thing from my phone, which is an amazing thing. We live in an amazing country where we can do stuff like this. But I'm operating the studio, calling in, and everything else from my phone while I am in Corsicana, Texas, down here at this great four-county Tea Party rally. Michael Smith, my good friend, is up on stage right now speaking, and we've had some great speakers already. Got to have a great day down here and broadcasting on Contending for Truth Radio. studio from Corsicana, Texas. You know, Dan, this is what it's all about. Sitting down here helping man a table for Wayne Christian, Ken Paxton, Dan Patrick, and my good buddy. We talk about a lot, Sid Miller. And, Dan, you know what? I'm going to finally get to shake Sid Miller's hand today. He's supposed to be coming down at some point. Looking forward to visiting with him a little bit, shaking his hand. Got to put together some of his yard signs this morning. Made me feel like I'm really finally in Texas. And, you know, we got a great Tea Party rally going on out here. We got a lot of people out here. We got a lot of tents set up, different people showing off their stuff, different people supporting different candidates and having some great fun. And I'm going to tell you, Dan, I am standing at the base of the biggest flag that I've seen in a long, long time. It stands up there. It's got to be about 100 foot up in the air by the top, and it's huge. And surrounded by four flags on the bottom. It's a beautiful spot. Michael Smith and I and his son Quinn had a good time, had dinner last night with Ralph Gonzalez, who's putting this Tea Party thing together, had some great discussion with him. And I'm just having a great time, Dan. You know how it is down up here in Texas. I'm always having, I think, more fun than anybody should. But we're going to have a great guest on today. Bob Struble's going to be on, and folks, for the most part, Dan and Bob are going to take the show. I'm going to be here at the Tea Party. It's kind of hard for me to continue to go back and forth. But, Dan, with that, I'm going to send it back to you for some opening remarks. I wish you could be up here, my good friend. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, and yeah, I wish I could be there with you. It's nice to see people starting to get involved with the grassroots movement, and it's nice to see it growing, because I really believe it's going to be the salvation for our country. We have to get away from what's going on between the two parties and create a sub-party off the Republican Party so that we can get this country back on track. Too many of the Republicans have sold out and gone with the other side, and really the two parties are not any different anymore, and something we need to change. We need to get back to the basics and get this country back online. Seems like nobody wants, neither side wants it to go back, and that could very easily spell the destruction of this country. And this country means everything to me, and that's why I'm fighting so well. That's why all of us are fighting so hard to save, the stars and stripes and the way America should be. And, I'm just hoping that we can do it. And this come November is going to be a very, 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 very important election. I think we have a good chance of getting some good people in there. And we can do that again in 2016, then we can be in pretty good shape to get this country started back on the right direction. So, with people like you and Jennifer and all our friends, we have tons of them, and a lot of great patriots out there, and it feels good to know that our word's getting out.
Very true, Dan. And you mentioned young people, and I'm sitting here with Kyle Griesinger, and he's a 19-year-old working for Wayne Christian, who we talked about last week. I've learned one thing in Texas. There's the two most important races in Texas, the agricultural commissioner and the railroad commissioner. And I'll tell you, when Wayne told me that the railroad commissioner has nothing to do with the railroad, I knew I was in Texas. But that's what this is all about, you know, and you and I are we're connected to a lot of young people that are out working, and they're beating the ground for these great candidates. And, you know, that's what this is all about, Dan. And, you know, you and I, we've been around a little while. You a little bit longer than I have. But, man, I'm going to tell you, Dan, it's so important. And I think if we do anything other than generate some excitement about among our young people. You know, Michael Smith, who's up on stage right now, my good buddy, Conservative Nation Media, Conservative Nation Radio over in Fort Worth, Texas. We got his young son with us, Quinn Smith. He's 13 years old. He's manning the cameras over there. He's operating the equipment for Michael. We're live streaming this. He's been out, more than him and I, Quinn and I put up the whole table and chairs and everything. And you know what, Dan? That's what it's all about. And that's why we keep on keeping on. I'm glad you mentioned those young people. We're going to have some young people on here soon. I'm working on getting Colton Buckley. That is another 19-year-old, incredible guy. He's Sid Miller's campaign manager. Working on getting him. He's going to be on a show here soon. And then I want to get some of these younger people that are working on it and get us a roundtable for them one Saturday morning with some of these young people that are working on these campaigns to talk about what they're doing and to talk about how they can encourage people to get out and fight. But anyways, with that, I'm going to pass it back to you. I'm looking here on the board waiting for Bob to call in. As soon as he does, we'll unmute him and bring him in. I'm hoping you can hear Michael in the background, Dan. Can you hear him?
Just a little bit. You know, the wind is getting, I'm getting kind of a lot of wind coming in.
That was what I was afraid of. The wind blows in Texas a whole lot more than it blows in California, and it's been a difficult. But I tell you, I'm glad we've got it, because if it wasn't, it'd be real hot out here right now. So with that, I'm going to hand it back to you to talk a little bit, and I'll put myself on mute, and then as soon as Bob comes in, I will let you know, and I will unmute him, and we'll let you two go at it.
Okay. Well, I'm telling. This week's been an exciting week. A lot of changes. Obama's been angry again with his trying to push his campaign on not requiring.
Dan, let me interrupt real quick because I wanted to let you know. Bob just called in. I just got him unmuted, so he is there. I'm going to unmute and let you go ahead and go with the show. Bob, I am out at the Tea Party Rally down in Corsicana, Texas, broadcasting live down here. We got four different counties involved in this, a bunch of great speakers. Going to get to meet Sid Miller today, heading up the table for Dan Patrick and Wayne Christian, Ken Paxton and Sid Miller, and we're having a great time, but it's kind of hard for me to talk, Bob, so I'm going to go ahead and pass it to you and Dan. I'm going to mute myself. I'll be here in the background listening. Take it away, Dan.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to introduce Bob Struble, and Bob's out there in Arizona. So as we
actually Washington State, Dan.
Oh, Washington. I'm sorry. Way out there then. How is
Pretty
the weather
good.
Out there?
The weather's all right today. Sunshine, blue skies.
Oh, that's good. Now, Bob, why don't you tell everybody about a little bit about yourself and what you're doing right out there in Washington?
All right. Well, I'm a writer here, an editor for Catholic Lane. I've published quite a bit, nationally and even internationally. I've been writing since I was about. Well, I won an essay contest when I was in high school, so I got the. The bug with the pen, I guess you could say. I'm a retired school teacher. I've published a lot in academic journals, that sort of thing. I was a coach for a while, football coach and soccer coach over in Europe where I taught for a while. Let's see, what else? Politically, I've been active off and on since I was in high school. In college, you know, I was in student government, and then I served 3 terms as GOP state committee man here in Washington State. I was on the steering committee that established term limits for the state of Washington back in the early 1990s, before the U.S. Supreme Court overturned term limits. So we had high hopes in those days, Dan, that we could establish a rotation in office in the Congress, and the new broom would sweep clean. We'd bring in fresh blood and get the country right back on the right track again. But those hopes were pretty much dashed by our Politburo of 9 bedecked in their black robes and wielding the pen of a dictator. So all that work that we did was swept away, not only just in Washington State here, but half the states had initiatives and referendums, and term limits for Congress passed by an average margin of 2-1. It was a great movement. All went for naught. And then, my alma mater is San Diego State, which I have to polish my badge a little bit here. They were in the Sweet 16 in basketball this year, and last fall we won our bowl game against the University of Buffalo in football. So San Diego State's actually doing better now in sports than they were when I was there. I played a little football.
Great.
What's that?
I said that's
and
great.
Then, yeah, I'm well, a quarterback. I played for the University of Washington and played in high school. And then I've traveled a lot, you know, Europe, a little bit of Asia and the Middle East. I'm married to Gerald Struble. She's the famous singer here locally, and we've been married for 25 years. We got 3 kids. The youngest is just about to turn 16. I was born actually not far from Arizona. You mentioned Arizona. Well, I was born in Nevada, where all the showdown between the local militia and the federal government is taking place. So, Nevada, I don't know if you knew, is admitted to the Union during the Civil War, so it's known official motto is the battle-born state, and seems there's a battle taking place there now. Arizona Representative Kelly Townsend is up there for a press conference today, and she's been real active in the Convention of States movement in Arizona, where the idea is passed one house and trying to get it through the Senate now. So that's
wow.
I've been active in especially this. I put a lot of my political hopes in a constitutional convention, or more accurately, an Article 5 convention for proposing amendments to circumvent the whole district of corruption in Washington, D.C., and hopefully restore the written constitution. So is that good enough, or you want more, Dan?
No, that's fine. I agree with you 100%. Almost every weekend, I'm sure you've read my previous posts, we're always fighting for the Constitution. And Article 5 gives us kind of an opportunity to reboot the whole system, if we can find the appropriate people to do it. That's the only thing scary about it. You have to make sure that the people you elect to run the convention don't have ulterior motives.
Right. The thing about the convention, Dan, is it's all kinds of checks and balances built into it. Unlike the Supreme Court, which is basically a standing constitutional convention of 9, they issue these edicts, and there's no procedure for ratification of their decrees. It's just final. That's it. There's no court of appeal higher than SCOTUS, the Supreme Court of the United States. And so a convention, on the other hand, would require whatever it proposes. It's only a convention for proposing amendments, to quote the Constitution exactly. Anything coming out of the convention would have to be ratified by the state legislatures or by state conventions in the 38 states. So it's, you know, that's the safeguard that's built into it. This fear of a so-called runaway convention, I think, is draining out the gnat and swallowing the camel, because even if it were to run away totally, even if there were to be delegates who were irresponsible and self-serving, why, all they can do is propose amendments to the states. There's our safeguard. It's a whole lot safer than relying on the U.S. Supreme Court, unelected, irremovable, life-tenured, to do us justice.
Yeah, that's one thing I'd like to see go through as an amendment, is that term limits for the Supreme Court. Because once they're voted in, they're there. And that can be very beneficial to a given party. And this is what we're seeing today, is that it's being party-driven and not driven to back up and support the Constitution. This is my biggest gripe, is that the Constitution is being ignored and the Supreme Court is looking for ways to get around it. And this has got to stop. Between the writers and the, you know, they don't call them writers, but that's what they are. You know, when they add on to the Constitution and they take this thing saying that you can own this kind of gun or this kind of gun, and you got to have a background check or yada and all this other, all these stipulations. Well, that's fine and dandy if it's part of the Constitution, as part of the amendment. But they ignore the amendment and they just pass the law.
Yeah, exactly. And let me quote from George Washington's famous farewell address, Dan. He says, he's talking about the kind of change you just mentioned in the Constitution by an amendment. He says, let it be corrected by an amendment in the way the Constitution designates, but let there be no change by usurpation. That's what the Supreme Court is doing, is you're usurping power here. You're usurping the legislative branch, legislating from the bench, amending the Constitution from the bench. So he goes on, let there be no change by usurpation, for though this in the one instance may be the instrument of good, it is the customary weapon by which the governments, by which free governments are destroyed. The precedent must always greatly overbalance in permanent evil any partial or transient benefit. And so I take it back to Brown versus Board of Education. I think Supreme Court legislated and amended the Constitution from the bench on behalf of civil rights, a high cause, as Washington says here, the precedent must always greatly overbalance in permanent evil any partial or transient benefit. There was certainly a benefit to come out of that, but the real fault, I think, in establishing this precedent of legislation from the bench in Brown versus Board of Education was the failure of Congress to act. They were polarized and filibustering and this and that, and couldn't or wouldn't deal with the civil rights issue in the United States, and so they created a power vacuum by omission, and Supreme Court moved to fill it, and they've been moving ever since to fill it with that salutary reform or ruling as a precedent. And as the Congress has gotten more and more polarized, more and more locked up in a gridlock, why the Supreme Court, the unelected bureaucracy at the federal level, the president through executive orders is filling the power vacuum. And you're starting to hear complaints in Congress. We're the ones that's supposed to legislate here. Well, why didn't you? Why don't you? And that was what term limits, rotation in office, was designed to do, to reinvigorate Congress, to put new blood in, sweep away all the obstacles to congressional legislation as required in the first article of the Constitution. And that, I think, Dan, is the best way to deal with usurpation of power by the other branches. Restore the balance of power, you have to restore the vigor and the power and the authority to legislate in the legislative branch.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree with you. Congress over the last 5 years has been absolutely useless. They haven't done a darn thing. You know, I look back at all these controversies like Solyndra, you know, Fast and Furious, Extortion 17, Benghazi, and the IRS, and we haven't gotten an answer on a single thing. When we, you know, back in 74, during Watergate, it was within a year. We had the president on the chopping block. And now it's 5 years with Solyndra. We haven't heard a word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is what's really frustrating me with the with Congress today. They're allowing the president, the judicial system, to, you know, both of them together, and, you know, the Justice Department to bypass the Constitution. I mean, Holder ignores and does whatever he darn well pleases.
Here we have the law enforcement officer in the United States is a lawless man who is advocating ignoring the state constitutions where they endorse traditional marriage. He says ignore them. In other words, the man's lawless. I'm wondering if he can overturn, if he can propose overturning and ignoring the state constitutions. Why not the national constitution as well? I mean, we're in danger of just completely losing any semblance of rule by law in this country. And Obama's comes up against the 22nd Amendment, which requires two terms, but wondering if suppose Holder decides that we need to ignore that as well.
He's trying to push it. I know that. He's already mentioned it. So, and he's had a member of Congress bring that up.
Really?
So, yeah, that's a very real danger. And if that happens, we go into a totalitarian government where we the people doesn't matter. So we have to fight that definitely tooth and nail. And what I'm also seeing is that, as you said, the president's doing as he pleases without any ramifications from Congress. Not even occasionally a word or two, but that's all they are, words. And we need in Congress, I've been saying this for a while, we need definitely a house cleaning. And an Article 5 convention could do that and bring things back where we can get remove some of the laws that contrary to the Constitution and bring things back to the way originally it was. And another thing that's been bothering me is, the when it comes to religion, they have cut religion completely out. And that's something our forefathers, if you remember the summer of 1787, Benjamin Franklin addressed Congress and said, you know, during the Revolution, when we're in a pickle, every day we sat down and we prayed. And he goes, now that we're past the revolution and we're in peace now, what, are we better than God now? Or should we, you know, return? Should we ask for his divine guidance to build an empire? And that's, you know, we need the return of the morality in this country that a belief in the higher power comes with, you know. The far left totally mistook the separation between church and state. And if you ask any of them even where that came from, you know, that came from a guy named Roger Williams, who is a theologian and Protestant minister. And he was basically thrown out of England because he refused to practice religion under the Church of England. And then he came over to the States and found the Puritans doing the exact same thing. So he went 80 miles south and formed the state of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. And what he said is, we're going to have a separation between the church and a religious deity, like Protestant, Catholic, any of them. He said, it's all going to be, we're praying to God only. The United States should be oriented to God only. And how you choose to worship him is up to you. And it was the beginning of the first synagogue in the country was in Rhode Island, and the first real freedom of religion came out of that. And the far left took it and twisted it around and made it into something it was never intended to be. And I'm a firm believer we need to bring God back into this nation again, too.
Right. Speaking of Roger Williams in Providence, Rhode Island, there was a, remember the Ten Commandments fight with Judge Roy Moore, and meanwhile the Supreme Court ruling that Ten Commandments monuments couldn't be on public property, and they had a park named Roger Williams Park there in Providence, and
right.
They ruled that they had to take the Ten Commandments monument out of the park. This was back in, about the 70s or 80s. Actually, it was in 2004. Anyway, Michael Levine, who was a Jewish rabbi there, he was aghast that they were doing this. He says, well, maybe with this militant secularism, we shouldn't even have a park named after Roger Williams because he was a religious person. Where do you draw the line? I mean, it's getting reduced ad absurdum that they can't even, have our historic Ten Commandments, the Decalogue, which is the basis of law in the Western world, represented in a public park on a monument. I mean, militant secularism, I think, is a terrible poison. It's eating away at our culture like a cancer.
It's true. And they're taking our Constitution and twisting it around. And separation between church and state never was intended to be devoid of church. And it seems that they allow some churches, right, the Muslims, to practice their religion in the open. Yet if, both of us are Catholic, if we were to practice our religion, putting out a nativity scene or something like that, then that's forbidden. So it's not even fair.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, it's even-handed, but they're not they pretend and obfuscate and use smoke and mirrors and political trickery to deceive people into thinking they're being fair, but the reality behind it is, as you said, the Supreme Court has been completely rendered partisan. It's no longer a nonpartisan body which interprets the law, but rather a political body which legislates along the lines of its partisan preferences. Imposed, I like the Roe v. Wade thing, you know, to say that the Constitution protected the right to kill babies is just absurd. It's not what the Constitution says. It doesn't mention abortion in the written Constitution. That's the thing. We need to restore the scepter to the written Constitution and dispense with this living, breathing monstrosity that has been pushed by the lawyers in this country.
Well, that's another problem we have, is two-thirds of the legislators in our country are attorneys.
Now,
and
I have a a relative who's a lawyer, and I asked him about this, and he's upfront about it. He says, well, the attorneys are an educated class, and they're better fit to rule than the people are. And so he just comes right out and says it. Why not have rule by an oligarchy of judges? Because they're like Plato's philosopher kings. And I don't agree with that.
Well,
and they may be an intelligent class, all right, but as the historian Macaulay once said, 9/10 the calamities of the human race are due to the union of high intelligence with low desires.
Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, I don't even think they're that intelligent. I mean, my family was, my father has his PhD. My stepbrother has his PhD. Everybody surrounding me have PhDs. A lawyer is nothing more than a master's degree. Who knows Latin? So, you know, they get a little too high on themselves, thinking that they're that intelligent. And if you can catch them without quoting, you know, cases, they do terrible. I mean, my big thing when I was younger was yacht racing. And in the case of when you have a penalty, you know, you set out and you protest, and after the race you have to have basically a court presentation. But since these lawyers don't have any case precedents behind them, they can't argue. And I've beaten attorneys in race committee hearings probably 100 times. And it's these people, see, they think they know everything. And it's far from it. And if it's not even, they aren't even that good at debating. I mean, so I don't have a lot of respect for attorneys. And especially the you know, our Supreme Court. Because it's out for its own agenda. And,
well, as far as attorneys ruling the country, too, I think it was Richard Neely was Chief Justice of the West Virginia State Supreme Court, and he wrote a book called How Judges Rule America. And in that book, he takes note of the training that goes into a lawyer's professional background. It's all adversarial. It's not philosophical. And he points out there's probably no profession which is more ill-qualified to run the country than lawyers, because their training is designed for adversarial conflict in the courtroom, not for reflection and philosophizing and the kind of wisdom and good sense and political understanding that goes into running a country. They decide something. Yeah. You know, the school prayer where they took religion out of the schools. They decided on adversarial issues, not on whether it's going to be good for the country or not, whether it will promote America's greatness or demean America. Those aren't considerations in a lawyer's mind.
Right. And I also look at, if you look at it in the private sector, I don't know about up in Washington, but down here in Florida, we have this road that parallels the coast, and they allow billboards. Every other billboard is an attorney saying sue. And, you know, they wonder why our insurance rates are going through the ceiling. You know, and then they turn around and say, is the insurance company being greedy? No, it isn't. It's the attorneys being greedy. You know, because they don't even bring it to court, because if there's any chance of losing money, they refuse to do it. And they, there's very few trial lawyers because they really can't, most of them can't debate. Nor do they, nor can they bring up a valid argument. And that's why I have very little attorneys, and I don't get along. And this is why I think, the Congress should consist of people from all walks of life. You know, from the from a plumber to a airline pilot to a businessman to a little bit of
farm. Farmers would be good.
Farmers are actually very good because they're businessmen and they know what a hard day's work is.
Yeah, and they're close to nature. Close to nature, they get out and look at the stars and get some perspective on what life on this planet is all about.
Exactly. You know, farmers, actually, we were supporting one farmer in California who was running for office, and he couldn't get the money to be able to support him. That's another another problem with government today. If you're going to run for office, you either have to be rich or have to have something behind you with a lot of money.
Reminds me of what Disraeli said about the aristocratic government of Britain in the 19th century. He said, those were the days when the world was for the few and the very few. Getting that way again, Dan.
Exactly.
Few and the very few.
You know, and we have to fight and reboot the system. And that's why I've been for the Article 5 myself.
I really like your word reboot. Now, that's something that half a century ago wouldn't have made any sense to anybody in the pre-computer age, but when your computer gets infected with viruses, and if they're really bad, there's nothing to do but wipe the hard drive and start over. And case of all the viruses, all the maladies that are afflicting the body politic in this country and the culture and the economy, everything, top to bottom, pervasive, we need to reboot, as you say. With the one exception, we need to keep the written Constitution and reinforce it. And I'm not for starting all over in that sense. The Constitution is
document
is the most wonderful work ever struck off in a given moment by the brain and purpose of man, as Gladstone put it. And so that's something worth retaining at all costs, but it needs to be reinforced. And what good is the Constitution if it's superseded, overridden by this living, breathing Constitution? So we need to roll back the Supreme Court, reinforce the written Constitution, give Congress, in my opinion, once it's revitalized, once we have a decent Congress worthy of the name legislative branch, the power to do something about usurpation of power by the unelected branch, the Supreme Court, and make it part of the oath of office for a Supreme Court justice should be to go by the written Constitution and give priority to what is written over precedents that have been written by judges in courtrooms. Make it a felony. And then you'd have grounds for impeaching these usurpers, which is what they are. You know, Declaration of Independence mentions usurpation of power three times as justification for the American Revolution. We fought a revolution to keep power within proper limits, and now that it's completely broken free of those restraints, why we need to do something to restore the proper limitation of government, especially the unelected branches.
Oh, I agree 100%. Right,
do you think
now,
there's any,
mm-hmm.
Are you optimistic about this, Dan, or do you feel like it's like all kind of abstract, but reality keeps marching on?
Actually, more and more optimistic because we're seeing some growth in the grassroots movement. And essentially, they're basically under the same line of train of thought, that they see what's going on in Washington, and they cannot stand it. And the problem is people really don't understand Article 5. They think Article 5 is abolishing the Constitution. And there's nothing further from the case with Article 5. Article 5 allows an out-of-control Congress or judicial system and allows the people to step in and say, wait a minute, you know, and get things set straight. The Constitution, to me, is the second greatest document ever written, next to the Bible. And I believe it was divinely inspired. So the Constitution itself should be considered sacred, and what we need to do is put safeguards so this can't happen again. That's my entire opinion on it, is that we have to protect the Constitution and put severe penalties, not just a slap on the wrist, if a president or attorney general bypasses or ignores the Constitution. These people should be brought up on charges. And right now, executive branch, none of the branches can be brought up on legal charges. And that needs to be changed. And I think we can do it. The big thing with the Constitutional Convention is getting the appropriate representatives from each state who are, and I think we can get that from the grassroots movement. And I know we're going to have major backlashes from Washington. And
yeah, that's
what
for
we.
Sure.
Yeah, you know,
I think Washington's problem for this misinformation in the public mind wasn't just by accident that people got the idea that the Article 5 was some kind of threat to the Constitution, when in fact it's designed to save the Constitution when it's being threatened by an out-of-control federal government. So, you know, why do the people have this view? I think it was, you know, spin doctoring by the powers that be who hate the idea of a convention. The D.C. oligarchy does not like the idea that the people could circumvent their power and go around them. And so they spin and misinform about what this process would actually do.
Exactly.
Why serve their own interest, their own power?
It's when the people itself can stand up and say, you guys are screwing up, and it's time to get things set, And that's basically what Article 5 is. Go ahead.
In order for the convention to be successful, one of the prime objectives it has to have in the political sphere is to restore the legislative branch, as I said before. Because if the legislative branch is still locked up in gridlock, why, none of this is going to work. But once that's done, through rotation in office and other reforms in Congress, why, it becomes a revitalized assembly of the House and Senate. Once this bicameral Congress works again like it was designed to do, then they've got to have a way to deal with usurpation of power in the other branches, especially the Supreme Court. And I propose the following oath of office for members of the Supreme Court as follows. I do solemnly swear or affirm to give priority to the U.S. Constitution as written and amended under Article 5 of the Constitution, rather than as reinterpreted later in courtrooms. I will oppose legislation from the bench as contrary to honesty and in violation of my judicial duty. So help me God. Now, see, if they took that oath of office, Dan, then Congress would have good reason to impeachment if they violated it. Impeachment would be just based on violation of the oath of office. It would be simple and straightforward, and you'd have them, at least more so than today, where we want them. Subordinate, public servants, not public dictators.
Exactly. Today, right now, they take the oath and they totally disregard it. Basically, they might as well not even take one.
I solemnly swear to defend and uphold the Constitution of the United States. Well, but then they redefine Constitution of the United States to mean living, breathing Constitution. So it means to be made very clear that living, breathing Constitution is not what rules this country. The scepter belongs to the written Constitution.
Exactly. And we should use the only things they should refer to are the Federalist Papers, because the Federalist Papers were written specifically to define the Constitution word for word. And it was actually a very well done. Madison and Hancock did a great job on that one. It's a wonderful way to refer and gives the Supreme Court support under a certain, part of the Constitution. But they're doing today, they don't even mention.
Hardly, be second, right after the written. The text of the Constitution should be first. Federalist Papers second. With reference to the meaning of that. And by the way, Hamilton and Madison, the prime authors of the Federalist Papers, both stated in no uncertain terms, Article 5 convention was preemptory. It has to be called by Congress if the requisite number of states apply for it. And they talked about the safeties built into it. They understood what Article 5 meant, and they're not being listened to. Instead, it's these Madison Avenue spin doctors that are trying to persuade the public that the convention is our greatest danger. And a lot of conservatives, unfortunately, are buying into this, people who are constitutionalists. And one way to save the Constitution, they're afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing the power of propaganda.
Well, thank God there's a few of us out there that don't listen to propaganda and listen to what's right. I've been going over the Federalist Papers for several years now, and if you want to know the true meaning of the Constitution, read the Federalist Papers, because it clarifies everything. And, you know, they're being totally ignored today. Mm-hmm. And this is something we have to bring out. We have to bring out and educate the public that if you do have a question, you do have a, you know, something is not clear to you in the Constitution, refer to the Federalist Papers. That's what they're there for. You know, Hamilton and Madison did, you know, a great job writing it up. Just like, you know, Adams and Jefferson with the Constitution. You know, you're getting two opposing points of view, and they come together. That's what Washington was brilliant about. That was one of the most brilliant things he did, is he got two opposition people and then said, put it together. And
we know, getting back to
go
fundamentals,
ahead.
Dan, as I said before, as we, I think, agree, the fundamentals of political reform have to be, first of all, restoration of Congress as a legislative branch, de facto legislative branch, and you know, the elimination of the Supreme Court as a usurpacious legislative branch. So that's a fundamental reform there. But I think, you know, no society is going to be function effectively, however beautiful its constitution may be and so on, if it's removed from its spiritual foundations. Ours is a Judeo-Christian heritage. John Adams, when he was president, made it clear that the Constitution was designed only for a moral and religious people. And as he put it, that if they're not moral and religious, if they become pagan, why, all the dark side of human nature will break through the constitutional restraints, like, as he put it, a whale through a net. This net is not made of steel cable. It's made of strands that can be broken unless you have a decent society. And we need, therefore, the fundamentals there. The ultimate fundamental is to get back to our Judeo-Christian roots. And that's another issue that the Constitutional Convention must address, and that's this twisted version of separation of church and state, which amounts to little more than militant secularization of the public square. Public square was not designed by the framers or by the founding fathers to be secularized. Religion and the wisdom that springs from our Christian roots is essential if we're to pursue the right path as a country, and therefore the restraints on religion have to be taken off. I mean, we don't want any one denomination ruling the country, but as Billy Graham said once, separation of church and state means freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. I'm not trying to separate God and state. The idea that you cast a pall over the whole public square and people are not allowed anymore to cite the wisdom that comes from sacred scripture and sacred tradition is absolutely insidious in terms of its effect upon our culture. I mean, even as late as the presidency of John F. Kennedy, he used to quote often from the Bible, quote scripture unapologetically. Now, as a public school teacher, I can testify how this pall of political correctness pervades everything, and how everybody tenses up when religion is even so much as broached. And there's so many areas where the Christian public school teacher has a gag in his mouth imposed by the courts, and then that has to be removed. That it has to, we have to have freedom of speech again. The First Amendment talks about Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. That's what's emphasized constantly by the courts, but they forget the next phrase, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Free exercise of religion is dead letter right now in the public square, and it has to be restored. And a convention will sin seriously by omission if it doesn't address that.
Oh, I agree with you. I mean, what I've seen happen over the last 30 years has been atrocious. I mean, as I said, I mentioned how where the origins of separation of church and state actually came from. It, you know, came from a preacher who just wanted a place to preach. And, you know, and then it started, other states or the other colonies started saying, this is a good idea. And so other states, you know, other, you know, the Protestants, the Baptists, and Catholics, and, you know, all the other divisions of Christianity were allowed to practice their religion the way they chose. Nowhere in, you know, did Roger Williams, if anything, was an extremely religious person. Religion was, from the the first people stepped foot on this continent, Christianity was there with it. You know, when the first pilgrims got their feet wet and, you know, trudged through the water to the shore, Christianity was there. And it was this nation was founded, as you said, on the Judeo-Christian belief. And now they're trying to tell us, no, it's, you know, we want to completely abolish it. That's not the way, you know, I tell people to go to Washington, D.C., and I said, you look at all the old buildings, and what do you see? You see God carved in granite. You know, the original buildings that are in the mall area, every single one of them has a reference to God. You look into the Capitol Rotunda, what do you see if you look straight up? Washington's ascension to ascending to heaven. You know, and the far left has taken that and removed that, and we have to bring that back. Because I believe that once we bring that back, the gay marriage issue and the abortion issue will solve itself. Because once you bring back morality, then you cannot support such other things. And this is what the other side's afraid of. And I believe that, you know, this is what we have to do, is the first step is bring back God as our cornerstone of our nation, and then build back from there. Because without morality, without honor and integrity, what does one have? And these politicians today don't have any of that.
Right. It reminds me of what William said. He was contemporary of Roger Williams, I think, during the colonial period. Said that nation which is not governed by God will be ruled by tyrants.
Mm-hmm. And then we're seeing it happen.
There are.
And, you know, the Article 5 movement, we have to, you know, that's where you and I met. And it's, it needs to be clarified to the people. And it needs to be shown what it really is. So we can get delegates from each state who, you know, want to add amendments to protect the Constitution. And, you know, there's several amendments I had written down that I believe will be beneficial to the nation. And then bring it through the amendment system, you know? People don't understand that you can't just say, people somehow have forgotten that they think the Supreme Court is the leading court of the land. And it's the Constitution that is the highest. There's nothing above, no judicial or executive branch that is above the Constitution. And if you want to make changes to the Constitution, it has a way of doing it. And all I have been asking is go through the constitutional process. And people don't even understand that. I mean,
Well, let's entertain another topic here, Dan. Suppose that the constitutional process fails us. I mean, say, A, we can't get the requisite number of states to apply for a convention. It's 34 states. And that's got to be a possibility. Insofar as the convention is seen as a division between red and blue states rather than a coalition of left, center, right to save the nation. But if it becomes left versus right, there just aren't enough red states to call a convention, much less ratify what the convention proposes. So let's just say for the sake of argument that we exhaust this option. And my religious persuasion is Roman Catholicism. We have a catechism that says that one of the preconditions for insurrection is that you exhaust all available options. If all our peaceful and legal options are exhausted, obviously that using D.C. has long since been exhausted, and convention fails too, then what? Do we just give up, kiss our chains, or do we move it to the next level? What do you think, Dan, about, I mean, just saying we've reached that stage, supposedly, that the convention doesn't work, can't get it called or can't get anything ratified, why then what? Do we look to secession? Do we look to armed insurrection? What, in your opinion, comes next?
Well, the only way I would say secession is to essentially have the people rise up and say, you know, separate themselves from the government and start their own government based on the U.S. Constitution. Yeah. Override them just because right now we're on a one-way path to communism eventually. It'll go through the socialistic state and then end up no different than the USSR used to be. So the people have to rise up. Yeah, go ahead.
It's interesting to analyze the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, where it says, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible. Now, let's take those two concepts, one nation under God and indivisible. The pagans in this country want to eliminate that, one nation under God. I don't know how militant they are in changing the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. By the way, the Knights of Columbus back in the Eisenhower administration were the ones that were behind the movement to add those words, one nation under God. Two words under God were added after a campaign led by the Knights of Columbus, of which I'm a member, I'm proud to say. But anyway, so they would like to undo that and take those words back out again, effectively, if not actually. Whereas, from our standpoint, the next word, indivisible. I mean, what I hear you saying, Dan, is that if we can't restore one nation under God, then we need to forget about the indivisible part and have a downsized but upgraded republic where the Constitution, the written Constitution, really rules.
Well,
am I correct there?
I would prefer, I don't want the nation to, let's go back to Abraham Lincoln. And his was one of his big, you know, right below getting rid of slavery was the preservation of the Union. And I believe wholeheartedly in the preservation of the Union. What I'm hoping that what would happen is that we could get the entire Union to rise up and say enough is enough. Because I'm seeing people on both sides getting upset with what's going on. Because it has gone beyond a Democratic Party and has moved on to a Socialistic Party or a Progressive Party. And there's a lot of people in the middle who are, you know, moderate Democrats who don't agree with what's going on today. So my idea would be turn around and have a general election not done by the states but by the people.
There's no constitutional way to do that, though. How do you hold an election? You mean like a national plebiscite or referendum?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing, there's no legal way to do that. The framers didn't design a national referendum into the Constitution, so how would
that
be? Yeah,
tell you the truth, I don't know how to, other than that, I would say put an amendment into it or have somebody write one in, submit it, and see if we can get it passed. And then, and see if the people, and then have the people make the decision and no longer the government, because the people, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I don't know if you listen to our entrance. We start out with Red Skelton's breakdown of the Pledge of Allegiance.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's wonderful, especially when he said it's the government, it's the people are the ones actually in charge, because we elect these people to govern us, and it's by the people. And if we can't get it through on a state, state by state level, then it should be left up to the people.
Yeah, it should be, but I mean, how do you get from point A to point B? That's the problem. It's like, for example, just recently in Spain, Barcelona and Catalonia are advocating for a referendum to decide to secede from the Union, which is self-determination. If they want to leave Spain and become their own nation, it's not as if it's unprecedented. They used to, centuries ago, be an independent nation. And so the Supreme Court of Spain, or the Parliament, rather, ruled that was illegal to even hold a referendum. So what are you going to do when Simon Legree is not going to release Uncle Tom of his own free will, just because Uncle Tom has the right to self-determination and doesn't want to be a slave anymore, and he says, "Well, I want to be free." So Simon Legree has the power. He says, "Too bad, you're going to be a slave." So what are we going to do? We talked about a convention. Well, suppose they stop the convention. talk about a national referendum. Well, they'll just say there is no such thing. It's not legal. Ultimately, it comes down to a position where they've got the power and we don't. So what do we do then? We can either surrender or we can fight. I think need to start this now. We're not at that point yet, Dan, but, you know, Abraham Lincoln, you mentioned Lincoln and preservation of the Union. The big difference there is the threat to the Union came from a very great evil, and that was slavery. And so in advocating for the preservation of the Union, he was at the same time, ipso facto, opposing slavery. Whereas now, if a movement for breaking up the Union becomes viable, I mean, Texas is often mentioned. Remember after the 2012 election, you got, a quarter of a million to a half a million signatures advocating secession from the Union. Should become viable, why, it will become on behalf of not an evil like slavery, but on behalf of restoration of the Constitution, restoration of our Judeo-Christian tradition. It's polar opposite of the situation Lincoln faced. He wanted to preserve the Union in order to maintain good in this country. It may be necessary to break up the Union in order to restore good, because all the powers that be are forcing this pagan agenda down our throats and compelling us to bow to a paradigm that is contrary to our religion and to our Constitution. The lesser of two evils, it seems to me, if it comes to that, I don't think we're there yet, but we need to start thinking about it, at least in theory. Lesser of two evils is a downsized but upgraded republic. The Constitution, written Constitution, restored, and religious freedom restored in a smaller republic, maybe with Texas as its core, and other states joining, than have all 50 states continue the downward slide into this ghastly monstrosity, which is contrary to what our forefathers fought for. My dad fought in both world wars. He was a volunteer in both of them. Those were the great patriotic wars. World War II, the greatest generation. And I think what's happening now is like spitting on the grave of our forefathers. It's a terrible thing. And it would be better by far, if we exhaust all available options within the context of the full Union, then we have to start thinking, in my opinion, about a downsized but upgraded republic.
Right. I'm just, believe it or not, I just went out and got myself a Colt 45 and am collecting rounds. Oh,
I saw the picture of it on Facebook.
It's to me, it's a very patriotic weapon because it was, built by John Browning, while he was working for Colt Manufacturing in 1893, and he sold it. It went through testing in 1905 to 1908, and they fired it 6,000 rounds before they had to cool the weapon down. They just dipped it in a pot of water and then pulled it out and threw another clip in and kept on shooting it. And it's been in every war since the Spanish-American War. So it's about the most constitutional weapon you can buy. So that was one of the reasons I picked it. But anyway, I did that because I believe in the local militias. And
The old saying, in 1836, Sam Houston made men free and Sam Colt made men equal?
Mm-hmm.
Colt developed the great
Colt.
Equalizer, they called.
Yeah, Colt was a, great people came out of Colt Manufacturing. you know, Browning, the Browning 50 caliber is still being used today on our Humvees. And the preferred weapon of choice amongst the Navy SEALs is still the Colt 45 as a sidearm. And it's over 100 years. So, I mean, that speaks a lot for Colt and Browning. You know, 2 billion people. A brilliant company and a brilliant person. Yes, go ahead.
Well, so, I was saying back to Sam Colt and Sam Houston. Actually, the idea of secession has some strong precedents in American history. I mean, what was it Sam Houston led, the Texas Revolution, to secede from Mexico? A successful secession, and they were 9 years in independent republic before they voluntarily joined the United States. Or what was the American Revolution but from the British Empire? I mean, we think of secession, think of the Civil War, which was a failed attempt, partly, I think, because of, well, certainly because of slavery. They had the ball and shackle of slavery was tied to the secessionist cause. And secondly, they fired on Fort Sumter. In contrast to the Battle of Lexington and Concord, where Captain John Parker famously said, stand your ground, don't fire unless fired upon. But if they mean to have a war, let it begin here. Southern boys should have taken a cue from Captain Parker and waited for the North to fire their first shot. You live down in Florida, so I hope I'm not stepping on your toes there, Dan.
No, actually, I agree with you. I grew up in Rhode Island.
Oh, okay.
So that's my... and I believe 100% they have to fire the first shot. And once that begins, then we can start, you know, the revolution. And I'm just trying to think of alternatives to avoid war. But I'm seeing it more and more that Thomas Jefferson said a revolution now and then is good for a country. And I'm tending to agree with him.
What do you think about the standoff in Nevada? You've got the locals and the militia on one side and the Bureau of Land Management, Federal Bureau on the other. Some pretty ugly stuff going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you followed that at all, Dan?
A little bit, but not really. I haven't, unfortunately, been in the hospital a lot over the last year and haven't been able to listen too much. But from what I've heard is that there is basically a showdown between the two where the people are making a stand against the state. And they're also doing it in Texas when it comes to Common Core. And I'm seeing this also. We're seeing movements in that direction also in Alabama. We're seeing movements in Georgia. Florida, we're trying to get it to get going. So actually, you're starting to see the first steps in going in the direction you've been talking about. And eventually it is going to, because of the people I know are not going to stand for a progressive or socialist state. Before they take away they're trying to take away our Bill of Rights right now, And I think that's going to be the spark.
Right. Well, let me read you just a little bit from this article I'm looking at now. It says that many people have flocked to Nevada to support rancher Cliven Bundy in his battle with the Bureau of Land Management. Bundy is being strongly supported by Dana Loesch on Fox News, radio host Alex Jones, WorldNet Daily, and Glenn Beck of The Blaze. The Nevada militia is asking supporters from across America to join them, and the Montana militia has arrived to provide armed support, quote-unquote, against the BLM.
Right. Were you part of the call-in last night?
No.
That went on past 3 a.m., and militias from all over the country are offering Bundy support, you know, coming over and saying, you know, we're here. So that may be Nevada may be the starting point. I mean, which
yeah.
I wouldn't be, you know.
Bundy's afraid the standoff could be another Ruby Ridge or Waco disaster. The governor of Nevada is actually showing a little bit of courage here. He's criticizing the Bureau of Land Management. He says that they've overreached and overreacted by sending too many agents and helicopters, and it was not necessary to use stun guns. Anyway,
we'll
see how this plays out. I know Representative Kelly Townsend, who's a friend of mine, he's real active in pushing for a constitutional convention. She's helping support the Nevada resistance.
You know, you guys, this is Scott. I want to break in here for a second. I got an opportunity. I'm sitting here listening to the rally here in Corsicana, Texas, and listening to you guys at the same time. You're having a great conversation. But I got the little wind died down just a little bit, so I think I can throw something in here real quick, and I'll go back to letting you go. You know, you're having
good
a good discussion,
Scott.
Really important. I'm a firm believer that we're going to win this battle when the states start standing up against the federal government. The founding fathers spent two hot summer months in the summer of 1787 putting together a constitution just for this purpose. The constitution gives the federal government a few rights, a few responsibilities, and it hands everything else over to the states. And what's going on in Nevada is kind of insane. I do want to throw in here on our new show, the Conover show on Thursday nights, Rodney Conover broke news that didn't come out until the next day. Real proud of him on that, about really what's going on is Harry Reid wants to take that land and put solar panels on it. And so man, I'm going to tell you, if the governor of Nevada would stand up, walk over, pick up that orange fence that's got a First Amendment sign on it, says this is First Amendment area, and threw it in the garbage can, I would say that there'd be people calling for him to run for president in 2016. I'm not quite sure why he hasn't figured that one out yet, but I just have to agree with you guys. This is I think this is the last stand right here, and I think we need to use Nevada for that. I'm hoping that the government of Nevada, the state government, stands up. Because while that's going on in Nevada, nobody's noticing the Bureau of Land Management is here in Texas trying to take 90,000 acres of land here in northern Texas along the Red River and hand it over to Oklahoma. They want to take it away from a rancher here and hand it over and just toss it across on the other side of the border. Now, you might think that's insane, but that's already gone on once. Not too long ago, the Bureau of Land Management came in and tossed some property, some acreage from the state of Texas on over to Oklahoma. So it's kind of crazy, but I wanted to pop in here again and mention the rally here at Corsicana. We're having a great time. We've got some great speakers. Kathy Adams, the leader of Eagle Forum here in Texas, got up and gave a great speech. We got Jerry Donaldson on stage right now. We got the great Jimmy Kerr here as emceeing. It's his birthday today. We want to give him a great big shout out for his birthday. Come out on his birthday and emcee a Tea Party rally. You can't beat that. And while we're standing here, I'm watching and watching as the cars keep coming in for that car that I'm waiting for, Sid Miller, running for agricultural commissioner here in Texas, to drive up with his big old 10-gallon hat and walk over and get to shake his hand. So with that, this is Contending for Truth Radio, and I'm going to hand it back to you guys.
Thanks, Scott.
Okay. Thanks, Scott. And, I'm glad, you know, I think through the grassroots movement, we can use that as a rallying point to get enough people behind an Article 5 convention. And as I said, if it doesn't work, we'll try to do the constitutional, do an amendment process, and if that doesn't work, well, we're left with no choice. And a little by little, I am, because I'm not rich, preparing myself. I have stage 4 heart disease, so I'm not going to be very good for a militia. But I am ready to defend my home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the reason for the Colt 45. And I'm going to be getting my next weapon is an AK-47. And
now, it sounds like we're going to have to deploy you to rear guard duty, Dan.
Yeah, I'm not going to be up front in the front lines, unfortunately. But, you know, we have a little retirement community here, and it's consists of a lot of Vietnam vets, and less than an eighth of a mile down the street, we have a VFW. So what we're all planning to do is use this complex here as our staging area, and setting up, because a lot of the people from Vietnam, the war, they've already been to war, they know how to fight, and we have right down the road, we have a gunsmith who can modify weapons like the AKs to fully automatic, so we can, support ourselves, protect ourselves. And, though I'm preaching peace and I'm praying for peace, I'm preparing for war too. I don't want to see a war, but I believe in our Constitution too greatly to allow it to be lost.
Civil War with somebody the other day, in connection especially with the American Civil War as the backdrop. If a lot would depend on who the commander-in-chief and who occupies the federal government. Federal government's so polarized, and there's not very much possibility of concerted action by Congress, I don't think, but executive branch, if it has a strong leader who is willing to fight like Lincoln, why, it would probably result in a civil war, any kind of secession movement. But imagine, just a little contrafactual history here, suppose Lincoln had not been elected, suppose somehow Buchanan had gotten a second term. James Buchanan, why he was not for fighting the Civil War. He, the first few months after secession, he didn't do anything at all. So, would depend on the sort of commander-in-chief you had. There's no guarantee that it would have to mean Civil War. Possible secession could proceed peacefully. I mean, that's what it looks like what might happen in Scotland in September. They're voting to secede from the United Kingdom. And everyone agrees, including London, that if they vote that way, that their wishes will be honored without any kind of, you don't have to have William Wallace take to the field again in order for Scotland to win its independence this time. So we don't can't just assume that there'd be a lot of bloodshed, especially with the you know, there's an increasing movement towards secession around the country. You started with Crimea seceding from Ukraine. You've got the vote of 87% of the people of Venice and surrounding regions want to restore the Venetian Republic. They had an election. It wasn't seen much in the mainstream media because so much focus was concentrated on Crimea at the time, but it was simultaneous with that. People of northeastern Italy around Venice voted by an 87% margin to secede from Italy. Now, and you've got, as I mentioned before, the situation in Catalonia and Spain. This idea of you know, microstates breaking down into smaller but more free republics, it seems to be catching on to some extent here, and to the extent that that happens, why it would provide a backdrop for what might happen here in the United States. I don't think it necessarily has to mean civil war. I think it's secession. It could be that, you know, especially if we've got the right chips in our corner, why wouldn't the United States government might not march in with tanks and so on?
Well, that's what I'm hoping. It's something that we can do this without bloodshed. I'm not a big person on war myself, but
self-determination is high principle.
Yeah.
I mean, what is the matter with people determining their own destiny and living under laws that respect their beliefs? The United States
mm-hmm.
is so polarized now. I mean, basically, you've got half the country hates the other half. What would be wrong with dividing the country up into two republics?
It's almost the same damn, it's almost the same line that was during the Civil War, except for it's just the opposite. You know, it's the South that wants, at least down here, I mean, look at what's going on in Texas. Look at what's going on in Alabama. You know, Georgia hasn't quite decided yet.
But Georgia did apply for a convention already. They formally applied.
Okay, so we got Georgia down here, you know. And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't have any problems with that. They can keep the snow up there. And, you know, even though Rhode Island is my home state, I disagree with their progressive point of view. And
tell me about it.
Know,
I'm here in Washington, which arguably is the worst state in the union in that respect.
Yeah,
I mean, we're the only state which is where the people have voted for same-sex marriage, for partial birth abortion, believe it or not, was actually affirmed by a vote of the people of the state of Washington, led by Seattle, of course. Euthanasia was put into effect here by a referendum, by popular vote. The state has really got problems, so if something such as we're discussing should take place, I'm afraid Gerald and I are going to have to sell our house and move.
Well, this part of Florida is beautiful, Central Florida.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
I have a relative. He's just out of high school, young kid, but he has good values. And he said if there were to be a new republic in which constitutional principles were reaffirmed and Judeo-Christian values, quote unquote, I would move there in a heartbeat, he said. So,
well, down here,
a lot easier.
Really, you know, that's what we have down here. A lot more than you. I mean, we have like southern, very southern Florida. But it's a very small area, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and that's basically it. maybe down the homestead is blue. But the rest of the state, you know, from West Palm North is pretty much red. You know, it's good old-fashioned Christian values, and we have the same beliefs that we, you know, that I was raised with, you know, with the exception that there's still a little bit on the prejudice side, but it's not, that's not even a big problem. You know, that thing that Holder, you know, the Trayvon Martin case, you know, that was a crock of baloney. Fact was, a inner-city thug tried to overpower a small little security guard, you know, and the guy had no choice. I mean, everybody around here, even, you know, the radio, the TV stations around here for the first four days before Holder got a hold of it, were just treating it as essentially Martin mugging the Zimmerman. And, you know, until then, and then, you know, Holder got involved.
Dan,
yeah.
They're making an announcement right now. They're making an announcement right now about Nevada right here at the Tea Party meeting. The sheriff has made an announcement that those federal agents are to stand down in Nevada. Looks like the sheriff has taken a stand, and we'll have to see what happens next. But they just announced that on stage, that the sheriff in Nevada has told the federal agents they need to stand down. I'll let you go back at it.
Thank you, Scott. Like now.
That's a good sign.
Yeah.
Now let's see what the federal agents do. You know, with this Obama administration, I don't trust them as far as I can throw them. So, sadly, you know, that's why I've been looking into Article 5 and we'll try to do it under the Constitution, and if we can't, you know, we take the alternative step. It's something I'm not looking forward to, but, you know, if we have two, as you said, two different parts of the union, you know, we have to divide ourselves because we can't. We're at a stalemate. I don't see any other choice. Because passing an amendment today between, you know, there's such a division between the left and the right, passing an amendment would be virtually impossible.
Here, I just found something. On what Scott reported, the Bureau of Land Management has announced it would not enforce a court order to remove Cliven Bundy's cattle and was pulling out of the area. Wow. So it looks like they are standing.
Well, that is... There's some positive news. Yeah, we made it... Yeah, we may be able to avoid everything. Things keep on going that way.
According to this article, thousands of militia have arrived from as far away as New Hampshire.
Wow. That's what I was hearing last night. I was up till 3 a.m., And another one of our co-hosts, Jennifer Montrose, was reporting to me, and she said that militias from all over the country were sending reps, sending, you know, their militias down there. So they were ready to fight, and that's a, you know.
Well, I was born in Nevada, you know. I was actually toying with the idea, I hadn't told my wife yet, of driving down there, but it sounds like maybe I don't need to do that.
No, it sounds like it's being settled. You know, I'm surprised federal government's backing down so easily.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens. This is just a breaking news story half hour ago. So...
yeah, I mean,
anyway,
I don't know what, as I said earlier, I don't know what's going to happen down there. Depends on who's, you know, more steadfast. I think it's people, you know, over the government. I don't think the government's willing to commit to a war, you know, a battle. Because if they do, I think they know they're opening the door to a revolutionary war.
Yeah.
You know,
boy, look at the situation in Ukraine. The things in eastern Ukraine are getting more and more tense all the time. They see the armed activists, pro-Russian activists, have taken over a bunch of police stations, taken over the government buildings in several cities in eastern Ukraine, and so it was all quite interesting, too. My wife and I spent some time in the Ukraine back in 1988, so I'm really interested in what's happening there.
Yeah, it's...
We had our first marital quarrel during our honeymoon in Kiev. Obviously, it wasn't too serious since we've been married 25 years, so.
Yep, well, that's good. but, yeah, I don't know what's going to go on over there either. That's, you know, Russia has troops over. You have the Ukraine that they're building, you know. Everybody's kind of like looking at each other, waiting
for me,
to see you. Yeah.
For me, Dan, the overriding principle is self-determination. In the Crimea, the people, obviously, the vast majority, were jubilant at the prospect of leaving Ukraine and joining Russia. Who's to say they shouldn't? On what basis? Geopolitical balance or something like that? I mean, the overriding principle is self-determination. And the same would apply to eastern Ukraine. I mean, if they want to form their own nation that's allied with Russia instead of the West, as one blogger put it, if they want to secede so they don't have to have gay pride parades marching down their streets, as the EU would pressure them to do, then why shouldn't self-determination be the governing principle here? You know,
oh,
Obama and the U.S. Yeah, I mean, it's...
I'd like to...
here in my state. Everything east of the Cascades, which is two-thirds of the state geographically, but only one-third in terms of population, is conservative. We voted... all but one county voted against same-sex marriage in eastern Washington. Whereas western Washington, most of the counties... followed Seattle's lead and voted in favor of it. Seattle voted 2-1 in favor of same-sex marriage. So we have a radical split of the state, not just geographically with the Cascade Mountains forming the boundary, but politically and culturally. There's been talk about forming a new state of Lincoln with Spokane as the capital. I certainly would favor that, absolutely, on the principle of grounds of self-determination. Why should... I mean, I grew up in Spokane. Why should we over there be forced to follow the lead of Seattle. Seattle is just an alien territory from the standpoint of Eastern Washington. Anyway,
well,
I guess I just visceral disinclination to be enslaved by Seattle.
It seems like Seattle's becoming almost a second San Francisco. I don't
it is.
You know. Maybe
a lot of
them. Yeah, go ahead.
When I was a high school kid, Seattle was a fairly conservative city. But all kinds of Californians started migrating up to Seattle. A lot of the demographic, or the political change, was demographic insofar as you had mass migration to Seattle by people who like the climate up here or whatever. And Seattle is a completely transmutated city from what it was when I was a boy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what drove me out of California. I could not, believe it or not, Palm Springs, you know, during the days of Sonny Bono, was a conservative town. And when I first moved there, it was conservative. And it kept on getting, you know, the L.A. influence kept on getting worse and worse and worse, and I finally said, well, for one thing, I have all my family was over here. So I said, see ya. Time to leave, you know, because, and
it isn't so easy for me, Dan. My wife's family is here in Western Washington, so she does not want to move back to Spokane with me. So I'd like to go back to Spokane again. I've lived on both sides of the mountains. I'd love to go back to Eastern Washington. So the best I'm able to get by way of concession from Gerald is we take frequent trips to Spokane. And that's not the same.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be, unfortunately, one way or another, if the union divides like that, you're going to have to, you know, make a choice. What do you want to live with? And that's a difficult question.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I made my choice. Break up my family in order to move to Spokane. So.
Well, I'm down
that was one
here.
Of the things when we got married, Gerald said, you have to promise. Before she'd walk down the aisle, she says, you have to promise not to make me move. So I'm bound by that. Solemn vow.
Well, buy a little condo up there and have your primary house down here.
Yeah.
That's what my dad did. He,
is that right?
He has a decent-sized house down in Punta Gorda, Florida, just about 100 miles south of me. And his up in Rhode Island, it's a little dinky condo.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, and in between.
Your dad's still alive?
Yeah, he's in his 80s, and he has an RV. And he drives back and forth every year. God bless him. He's still going.
Yeah,
my
dad. You're very blessed in that respect, Dan. My dad passed away 46 years ago. So,
no, my first mother, she passed away in 82. So it's been a while. But my father got married about 10 years later. And, this, you know, his second wife has been such a part of the family for so long. I call her my second mom, you know.
Yeah. That's wonderful that you have your parents. Which I did.
Yeah, I know. It's I was blessed there. We have two parts of my father's side of the family had genes that last forever. You know, good gene pool. My mother's side, everybody died early. My mother died at 48 of a heart attack.
Oh, dear.
And I'm plagued with it. My brother's plagued with it. I've had my first bypass at age 40. So I've been living with heart disease for over 20 years, or close to 20 years. And so it's, what are you going to do? You know, I had a near-death experience, and it reaffirmed my religious beliefs, not in God as much as, you know, the church and, you know, Jesus dying for our sins.
Right.
You know, it was a very powerful experience. I was in a coma for 6 weeks. So
wow.
It was, you know,
something that... film. Have you heard about this new film that's coming out soon called Heaven is Real?
No, I haven't heard that one. I've been hearing about the Noah and that one. But not Heaven is Real.
Yeah, it's based on a near-death experience by a young boy. It's a true story.
Well, I can testify to that. I had a near-death experience as an old man.
That's kind of we were talking about optimism recently. That's kind of a encouraging sign that the entertainment industry has seen some Christian films come out. We've got Son of God. What's the other one called? God's Not Dead. That's playing well in the theaters. Noah, and then this new one that'll come out soon called Heaven is Real. So it's encouraging that people are being exposed to something besides the usual secularism.
Well, that actually shocked the heck out of me. Because, you know, we've been having so much crap coming out of Hollywood to the point where I haven't even watched, you know, I don't even like movies anymore. But to see some nice Christian movies coming back would be a wonderful, wonderful change. You know, wouldn't we like to see, you know, the Ten Commandments again with that Charlton Heston, that type of thing. You know, where we're having more of the family-oriented movies instead of all the depth and sex.
Right.
And, you know, there's...
Did you see The Son of God in the theaters?
No, I didn't.
It's a great one, Dan. Well, you can get it on DVD soon, I suppose. But it's an excellent job, I thought.
That's what I usually wait for, because sadly I can only move for 20 minutes at a time, so usually going out is something that I really can't do very much of. So, so I'm kind of a little bit, until God gives me a new heart. I'm sure he will. You know, he brought me back from the dead 19 months ago and told me he had more work for me to do. So I'm still here. So,
bad, Dan.
You know.
No.
So we're coming up to the top of the hour, and I had a wonderful conversation, and would like to invite you back for a Tuesday night as well. We have a big thing on parental sovereignty. And I don't know if Scott told you. Scott's a minister as well. And we work on parental issues. So we'd like to invite you back, hopefully, in a little while for our Tuesday night show.
And I'd be honored to be on there. Okay. Count me in.
Great. We'll see. I'll write to you this week, and we'll set you up for a...
Sounds good, Dan.
And thank you for joining us, and...
Have me. Have a good rest of the weekend.
You too. And thanks again, and this is Dan Wilson from Saturday Symposium, and everybody else have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on Tuesday for Parental Sovereignty at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. Thanks. This is Continued for Truth Radio, and signing off. Thanks.